Hey, everybody, it's John, and thanks to everybody who helps us out every week by going to patreon.com/stealthisbeer and throwing a couple of bucks our way so that we can mail beers to our guests and have some fun conversations resulting from that. So if you're not already, go check it out. It's patreon.com/stealthisbeer. As Cass says, a little bit goes a long way, and we appreciate the support. Now, here come the sirens.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
Hey, y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday, and I am sipping tea, and we are stealing beer.
Wow,
we have no beer. Tea. We never mentioned it during the whole Yepa show. These came together so last minute, nobody has beers to drink, so, and I'm sick of faking it. So right. One of the things I want to pitch is that if we end up in this situation again, pick something that we know all three of us can get, be it, you know, wherever in the world anybody is. So it could be anything from Sierra Nevada to Duval. But right. Try to make a plan where all three of us have it. We'll talk about them and then reveal what we're drinking. Yeah. But the whole everybody just pick a beer out, drink it, and talk about it has been so bad for the show. I vetoed that this time.
Yeah, well, I'm grateful that we don't drink guest beers or your beers on the show because I was at my local shop today and sold out. Look at you, Mr. Popular in Middlesex County.
I am killing it in Northwestern Middlesex. That's the sweet spot for Carton. We are all up and down the Greater Cheesequake Rest Area Park region. Although we did fall off a little bit when they renamed that Jon Bon Jovi rest area from Cheesequake.
Who didn't? But the only thing I'm drinking these days is Miller High Life off the Luker.
Nice. All right, so let's get Johnny Iffergen in the discussion. Johnny Iffergen, co-founder and lead brewer at Nyclo Beer Company, Brooklyn. How are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
You got it. No, nice. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
No, another brewery in Brooklyn. Record, who would have thought it?
Now hold on. You're a brewery in Brooklyn, and I don't know how close you are with John and me, and I don't even remember which of John's 73 Facebook pages he announced this lucred high life piece of shit promotion on. But John, was that your biggest engagement of the week? And Johnny, do you know about the lucre poured half foam Miller High Life for $8 that exists in your town?
Yeah, somebody made me aware of it. You know, as somebody who, you know, obviously we take pouring out of 8 lucres very seriously, hearing about this, you know, part of me is like excited because I love High Life too. I'm, you know, from the Midwest. But I also was also appalled at the same time. But then again, you know.
Yeah, I have the beauty of getting to be nothing but appalled. John, I mean, put it up. And I'm grateful to you, John, for not sharing who this was.
Well, I didn't want to.
Anger is so deep.
I don't want to give them the
And I appreciate you. You're a smart man. You're the one who doesn't say the name of the multiple murderer. You're the one who talks about the victims and not the killer. And I appreciate you for this. But Johnny, and this isn't to hate on Brooklyn. If I'm going to do that, I'll focus all my energy on Justin. But I was like, just fuck. Just fuck in so many ways. If it comes at a 40 ever, it doesn't merit a lucre pour. Can we agree to that?
Yeah.
Well, a six pack of High Life costs something like $7. So they're offering you a 2/3 glass of foam for $8. And yeah, it was.
I love most about
it
is I
didn't realize that the trust fund kids were doing that well these days.
The trust fund kids are killing it.
Congrats to them.
But what I love is the So in my mind, and I know I, you know, I'm friends with all the brewers that think it's cool to be a High Life drinker. So I've been handed a lot of High Lifes in my life. I'm always like, are you fucking kidding me? But whatever. It's a minimally offensive industrial beer. That being said, I always envision in that clear 8 ounce pony bottle. So I love the idea of drawing one of those on the bottom of the glass, filling the top of the glass with foam and being like, this is what you would have gotten in this store. That's how I want them to do the service. Anyway. All right. Anyway, enough bitching about Brooklyn. Let's talk about Night Glow and let's talk about coffee. Let's talk about both. Tell me your history. How do you end up brewing in Brooklyn? From Chicago? Where are you from?
Yeah. So my brother and I are from Mexico City. Moved here young. Toured in bands together and separately. And found a lot of downtime during touring. And my brother got immediately attached to, the third wave coffee scene. And I was very attached to the craft, as we used to call it, the craft beer scene. And so now it's, that's kind of what led my brother in Los Angeles to start Dayglo coffee.
Okay. And
in
that's
Silver
the
Lake.
Coffee. Okay.
That's the coffee. Yep.
Now, John, hold on one second, Johnny. John, do you know the Brooklyn-ness, our local prejudices about Brooklyn, that's hidden in him saying in Silver Lake?
I don't.
Okay. Just know that we're comparing like to like here, culture-wise. Okay. Go on ahead, Johnny. Keep going.
No, that's good. That's fine. It makes sense. So that went pretty well. And I was, from between touring, I was starting to volunteer at breweries in Chicago. I was, working at breweries when I could, home brewing
list
like crazy,
let's hear
having
them.
Parties.
If you say Dovetail and Half Acre, you're going to have our love forever. And then there's others we like too.
No. I love those guys too. No, I wish I worked there. I worked at Lagunitas when they opened in Chicago. Okay. The idea of Lagunitas was still alive and well.
That trippy Willy Wonka experience, yeah.
Yeah. No, those were fun days coming into work every day. But I have to say it was probably the best group of people I've ever worked with, just because I was still touring and there was a Lagunitas rep everywhere we went, and they took really good care of us. And it's just like, we called it the tribe for a reason. So it was just like such a good group of people to be with. And really made us felt like we were part of something bigger, until we were in France celebrating our honeymoon. And the Lagunitas French rep just told us that Heineken had bought most of Lagunitas, or the whole company, I should say. And then I think all our hopes and dreams went away at that time. And so did his, because most, Heineken is the Budweiser France. So most of his accounts were like, sorry, man.
Can't hear you
anymore. Yeah, so I still, really like enjoyed the people we were working with, but I wanted to go off into something a little bit more manageable, something that I could really cut my teeth in and get really into. And I just showed up at Weiner on the south side in the back of the Arts, and basically just kind of not forced my way to working there, but I just basically begged kind of Brian to hire me in whatever capacity, and it was great. He was actually making coffee upstairs at Four Letter Word. Big shout out to them. And he was like, yeah, no, like, fine. He literally said, fuck it, let's do it. And just like, I'll hire you, fine. And so I started working on the packaging line, and then eventually cellaring and all that jazz. And it was a brewery that, when it started, Belgian beer styles were really on the up and up. They were really popular. And Brian made, cut his teeth at Goose Island and Boulevard. So I think, that was really, really cool to see steam barrels and do all that stuff. But quickly realizing that was a dying art, or it just wasn't as popular as it used to be. So that was kind of the only sad thing about it. But it was a phenomenal experience. And I was really excited about kind of doing my own thing. I always wanted to do my own thing because you know, as again, first generation, very entrepreneurial, felt like, you know, I wanted to create a space just like the breweries that I had visited all over the country. And, you know, for artists, for all walks of life, people that just need somewhere to, you know, be creative and hang out. And that was kind of the impetus for starting a business there. And yeah, so I started a fun little brew pub there in Chicago with somebody from Lagunitas, and somebody was also in the scene and did more of like Scandinavian beer styles, lots of Nordic styles, raw ales, all kinds of crazy sati, all kinds of crazy stuff. And, you know, I was able to convince my brother to open up Daiglo next to us. And turned out that we opened up the business right in the middle of the pandemic and had no choice. And it just really kind of like, I think, threw us all for a loop. And, you know, as COVID did for everyone, really kind of made everyone realize what, you know, what was more important for them and what, you know, we really wanted to pursue. And for me, I think it was just really wanting to not make Nordic beers because I'm not Nordic at all. And I, you know, I have family from France, Morocco, and Mexico. So I just wanted to make drinkable, flavorful beers, very European forward. But with ingredients in, you know, the local terroir was important to me. Yeah. And that's one thing that I took out of that experience working there, was just being able to foster an amazing relationship with Sugar Creek Malt, Caleb and Whitney.
They're so great.
Just, they're amazing. Yeah, and they, you know, going on their farm all the time. Every time we go, there's always something new, something, a new project, and, you know, just really made me, I think the, and I always get goosebumps thinking about it, but I think when I saw Caleb walk out into the field of wheat and put his hands out and just like feel the grain, I felt.
Are
like
you not entertained?
I know.
Sorry, Gladiator. Sorry.
It was great. It was like, it was exactly that. It was just kind of like, holy shit. Like I don't know. It just hit me. I was like, you know, I was like, I'm fucking done, you know, working with, you know, no disrespect to all of the imported malt and everything that's beautiful and it's insanely, you know, amazing and grown in Europe. But like, I was like, no, this is, it's right in front of me. Like, this is what I need to work with. And just having that direct access to DB, being able to pick up the phone, talk to the farmer who's growing the barley or working with the farmers who are growing the barley, and just having that direct contact meant a lot. And that's how that all started. And then, once I left that space, my brother, was like, hey, do you want to start a beer brand called Nyklo? I thought that was definitely more who I was and wanted to be. And, I love that idea of sort of like, again, kind of reuniting. And, we started Contract Brewing. We brewed beer at a lot of places, Miskatonic, Weiner, just because, you know, we just didn't have the money to have our own space, and that's how we started. And then
once
we were out and about and doing all the thing, and people were discovering us, and I was driving around like crazy every day trying to sell the beer, you know, it became pretty clear that like contracting wasn't really going to be sustainable long term. But you know, it never really is when you're starting out. For at least for us, as far as our business model, it became clear that we needed to have our own space, our own, you know, a place that people could experience the brands and together. And so, yeah, that's kind of when we decided to start looking. Chicago was obviously our goal, but, you know, we had built up such a good following there. But there was just, I mean, believe it or not, the scene in Chicago had become so saturated. There's just a lot of breweries everywhere, way more than New York City. And it just didn't, there just wasn't anything that made sense financially. And even breweries that were for sale. And then, you know, just kind of being honest with ourselves about like, hey, or, you know, like, would this brand do well out in, you know, Lyle, Illinois, or you know, McHenry County or whatever, you know, like that just didn't feel right. You know, it felt like we needed to be in a big city. And so, that's kind of why we decided to start looking elsewhere.
Makes total sense.
My brother
said,
hey.
You said that is a lot to unpack, and I appreciate it because it all sounds
a lot.
First of all, I'll just say because I know we're on limited time here, but it sounds legitimate and genuine, and I see no reason to get in your way because you're saying what sounds like valid and inspirational stuff for me. But there's a couple jokes I wanted to make along the way, which I'll ignore because they weren't going to be funny anyway. But I did want to mention that the terroir of where you moved is the Gowanus, and it clearly mandates a Citra haze. You said at the very beginning when we were joking that you have 8 Lucres, and I do want to talk about that because that's an interesting choice to me. I did want to query, because the idea of having lost a world experiment on a largely Nordic Scandinavian brew program to COVID bums me out. Because to be honest, if somebody told me those words, I'd say you're not going to make it 3 years. And I'm wondering if there was a big future there. So I'd love for you to readdress the reception to it when there could be a reception to it before the world shut it down. And then Hall, there was something I wanted to push for you to talk about, but I think I've lost it. So at this point, I'll just probably sit back again. But what?
It's probably the Lucre.
No, it was definitely a John Hall, something about Chicagoland area that I didn't have a thought on. But we'll come back to it. Anyway, Johnny, pick back up where we left off. But let's talk about what you're serving out of 8 Lucres, because that's a commitment, man. John, can you think of a bar in the world with 8 Lucre taps? I mean, even in, like, Prague?
I don't know how many Chris Loring has, but...
fair enough.
Yeah, right.
Go on. Let's talk. Let's start there, and we'll just keep talking.
So no, yeah, the wave, the shift, as everything does in this industry and everything else. I've kind of always explained to people that I feel like beer is always like the mutual fund of the industry, and it's never going to go away. There's going to be ups and downs, and we're obviously experiencing that now. But to me, it was like there is this. We just kept coming back to like the idea of coffee and beer and the idea of having a space that was all day, very, I guess it is kind of a European, kind of thing. It's always open 7 a.m. to 11 every day and having a wide variety of beverages, to appeal to a wide variety, of tastes and people that don't want to drink the same thing every day. Just like you said, you're drinking tea earlier, right? Like everybody, mm-hmm. is discovering new things these days and wants to try new things. When my brother first approached me about how we were going to market Nyquil, he said, I don't want to do any styles. I just want to do tasting notes, just like the coffees. And I thought, I was like, Tom, I don't know if I can swear on the show, but I was like, you're out of your fucking mind.
You can definitely say it on the show. John says it once a show to me. So
yeah,
go on.
Yeah, I was like, dude, there's no way, like in Chicago and like, especially in Chicago, like this is a blue collar town. Like, people are going to be like, what, there's pineapple and strawberry in this IPA? What is this? So we kind of like, and I definitely early on, I was really worried about it, talking to a lot of the old school bar owners. But, a lot of the younger reps and crowd was just always like, no, like, don't listen to that. Like, keep doing what you're doing. Like, it's working. It's going to work. And that's kind of how that's how the third wave started too. There wasn't tasting notes on coffee before either. So I think this is definitely something that we've decided to keep because it makes sense. I'll give you a quick little example of that. We had a beer. I'm not going to say who it was from. It was phenomenal beer. You'll probably figure it out, but it was a really nice English, mild. And from a local brewery here that was just great. And it's pouring so beautifully on the Lucre. And of course, it wouldn't sell. Nobody would buy it. And I was just like, that's probably the problem is like, if we were to just list out tasting notes of this beer, it would actually, people would look at those tasting notes and be like, wow, like, ooh, biscuit, toffee, caramel, like whatever, like that wouldn't, your mind automatically goes to those memories in your head. Wheaties, toasted this or Milky Way. That's how people think, right? And so then it would have sold much more. So I don't think it's that people don't want to drink English Mild. I think it's because of the way it's, because they see the name English Mild and they think that's an old person drink. So I think that's why it's this tasting don't think works. Anyway,
I get that. I will tell you though, from experience, and this has changed over 13 years, because now, you know, there was one point where I would say things like, you know how this beer tastes like pineapple. And then at some point I started putting pineapple in beer. And then at some point I started making beer to taste like pineapple. And I still kind of do all three things, but I get the biggest bite on the ass from the general public crowd when I say something tastes like something, like you're talking about, like biscuity. But you know what I mean? And then like, this doesn't taste like biscuits. And I think the problem, I don't know where the coffee world is at tasting wise. I know the wine world has been built this forever, but even in the worlds of like silly things like olive oil, people have started finding notes. But those same people will sit down with you and you talk about beer and be like, so you see what I mean? There's a little bit of, you know, dried fig and some, you know, molasses or biscuity, or like you were saying, like chestnut honey notes. And they're like, no, it tastes like beer. And these same people will, I find, or I guess the ones that frustrate me, there's obviously exceptions to all these rules, but I don't know that you're not right to be careful of writing out a list of words for not getting arguments about where you're wrong on those list of words. You know what I mean?
No, of course. I agree with you. And I think that's what is kind of the beauty about what we're doing. And it's trying to also, you know, we, instead of doing more like actual ingredients, you know, we started to do more like, you know, delicate, soft, more like things that maybe aren't just flavors, you know, just to kind of also get a little more broad stroke.
And we need our writer friends, John and Justin, to use the word evoke a lot more than they're doing.
Then it becomes overused. And...
But anyway, so obviously, and I'm probably wrong here, but you said I'd figured out, my guess is transmitter, but I'm not going to lock that in as an answer. But so are you pouring other people's beers too? Are you making beer and serving other beers from the region in a side-by-side coffee beer house? And do you have food?
Yeah, so we started as the coffee shop. We have La Cabra pastries. We also have, like, you know, the...
Whoa!
Uh-oh. He's become a robot.
He's become a CD, but data, not noise. Data, not music. All right,
Johnny, you back with us?
Johnny, try
again. Am I good or am I...
Now you're good. Okay. All right, so now you're perfect. So start over from the pastries. That was the last word we heard.
Okay. Yeah, so we carry, just like Deglo carries International Roasters and Deglo Roasted Coffee, which is roasted in Ipswich, Massachusetts. We also carry La Cabra pastries. They're out of East Village. And we also have their sesame bread and, you know, a variety of different cheeses and meats and, you know, labneh and all that kind of stuff you get from Foster Sundry or anything kind of around here. Just to have something, right? And then we'll have food pop-ups on occasion. And as far as, you know, we have a crazy list of, you know, matcha, hujicha, teas from Kettle, from Spirit. We have mocktails made with espresso or distilled coffee that we distill in-house. We have you know, so that's Deglo, right? And with Nyclo, the brewery wasn't set up yet. So we had our farm brewery license and we wanted to start, you know, just getting to know the community and supporting other fellow farm brewer licensed breweries. And that's why we started carrying other breweries' beers. And it was a great way to support them and to really get to know sort of what everybody's brewing in New York City, what's popular. And
the answer is, you know, after, you know,
yeah, so after 30 days, I put only malty beers and clean beers on. And
that's fun. That's a tough rule.
Really fun. Yeah. No. So it's been cool. And then obviously now the brewery was finally installed and set up, and, you know, we started brewing, and so now we've got about 5 of the 8 lucres are now our beer. But I guess, you know, people always ask you that, Matt, you know, what's that the one question people always ask you when you're starting a brewery, especially right now, you know, what, how is your brewery different? Like, what are you doing that hasn't already been done? And while that question is a little, you know, it's always it. Going to answer.
Not a good question. For us, it's a real question.
It's a real question. We just, for me, it's like, you know, I feel like coffee in beer has, while it has been touched on, it has been done. It's primarily been done mostly, and I'm not, because I'm not denying that there's definitely people who have done lighter styles, but I'm saying most of the time you're seeing darker styles with coffee, for obvious reasons. And, you know, most, like 99.9% of the coffee we have is all light roast, really fruity coffee. And so I think the idea that sparked was we added a, it's from Manhattan Coffee Roasters, in Europe. They have a Colombian coffee from Diego Bermudez, who's an incredible, you know, grower. And it would have like notes of lychee and peach. It's like super tropical, funky. And we added it to a pale ale. And, you know, people were confused. Like the beer people were like, I don't get coffee in this. You know, I just get the hops. I just get the peach and the lychee. And I'm like, no, that's the coffee. And then the coffee people were like, where can I buy this? You know, like I've never had coffee like this in a beer. And so it's kind of like where it really made me realize that there's so much to be done in coffee and beer. And so having a space that we can explore that is really exciting. And you know, making sure that it's still balanced and it's not, you know, that's always been my thing. It's just, it has to be drinkable. It has to be balanced. And I prefer lower ABV. I prefer 12-ounce cans. Everything we do, you know, our milk pours are, you know, four and a half ounces, you know, 0.2 liter. Our even our like Praha mugs from Sam is like, those are, you know, 0.3 liter. Like everything's more about just like, it's all about session. It's all about, you know, taking a page from Chris Loring, like you mentioned, it's taking a page from everyone that's just, you know, again, we're a daytime heavy drinking space, but we do have, we have built up more people coming in the evenings now. I think inherently with our name, Dayglow and Nightglow, people like think it's really clever and they love the idea of like the spot becoming more of a nighttime spot, which we think is really fun too. But at the same time, you know, we're also here for the beer drinker at, you know, 8 a.m., who orders a coffee brown ale and a shot of espresso. And then we're here for the 10 p.m. shot of espresso cortado, whatever, you know, like we're here for everyone.
I like that you've normalized my 8 a.m. pint order.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's Bushwick. Right. And I think when we saw the space, even though it needed a lot of work and love, we saw the potential as this neighborhood just, there's no other place I think we would have been able to succeed in this concept, especially like you said, eight lucres. So touching on that, I think what it was for me was experiencing that I had two lucres on the brewery I was with in Chicago, and I, you know, we were doing Grodzitskis, we were doing all kinds of stuff on those, and I started like thinking about, you know, how it would be fun to pour a hazy IPA on those, or a crazy fruited sour or a stout or something, like, you know, because I'm a huge Guinness fan, and I also, you know, to me it was just like the foam was it is incredible, and it just amplifies flavor so well, and even West Coast styles you get like a lot more sweetness from the piney grapefruity notes. So we just decided to start doing that, and like I just thought, like, you know, it would be even more exciting, you know, because our coffee program is just so robust and you know, so detail oriented that it would be not balanced if our beer program and the way we pour beer was just kind of like an afterthought. So we had to make sure that, yeah. And also to be honest, like it was also maybe an expensive choice, but for economical reasons, our baristas are used to steaming milk, and, you know, steaming milk and submerging the steam wand in the milk. So to me, it was going to be much easier to train a barista to pour beer and do it well, because they also care about details.
I like it. Now, hold on. I want you to keep talking, but this is me reminding you, you said you had to split 2 minutes ago. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'll be okay.
Good. Keep talking. I don't want to stop you. I just don't want you to be like, the fuck, guys? I told you all we had. Anyway, keep going.
No,
let's talk
more
about this, because I love that
keep
idea.
Keep going until you can.
I also love the idea of like I suspect you drink a lot of coffee. But two, I love the idea of having worked at proper. So when I used to work in the restaurant business, I worked for an Italian group, and they would bring in like the most ridiculous coffee makers because they said it was the most important thing. And only a few people knew how to use them. But as I remember what they were doing on those things, it was actually almost like a lucre pour, you know what I mean? To feather on and off hot water and steam was that kind of 90 degree handle turn. So as you said that, I was like, oh fuck, I bet that makes perfect sense. Anyway, keep going, dude. I don't want to slow you down at all. I just didn't want you
to get
mad at us for keeping you.
No. I really appreciate that. No, it's actually okay. Thank you. I think that's kind of the big reason why it made sense to us. And I think we also just started to realize, it was really cool, like bringing in, so many of the breweries that we carried, whether it was from out of state, like Hudson Valley, or not out of state, upstate, like Hudson Valley and Wayward Lane.
Newburgh, say Newburgh Brown.
Yeah.
If you haven't poured Newburgh Brown on a lucre, get it and do that. Anyway, keep talking. Sorry, man.
Sure. Yeah, send me a list. so then having those, and even just trying like the hazy double imperials or whatever on a lucre, it was crazy to just kind of just to have that realization of like, oh my gosh, like it's amazing how something that could be maybe out of balance, a little too bitter, could come out really in balance on a lucre. And you know, again, because when you brew for a lucre or faucet, you have to, you're brewing your beers differently. You have to, you know, your IBUs have to be higher. Your carbonation levels are a little bit higher because the lucre is a very technical faucet. It has the ability to do a lot of things. The one thing it won't do is amplify flavor that isn't already kind of there, I guess. I don't know how to explain that. It's more just like, you know, so like if you're traditionally going to go for a Pilsner that's like around 30 IBUs or 35 IBUs, we're doing, you know, almost 40 IBUs because we know that we want that that sweetness, that sweet foam is going to mask some of that bitterness. So those are the things that, so when I'm ordering these beers from other breweries too, is like something that I kind of picked up on and noticed. And it was really fun to, you know, taste those beers on the lucre and pour them normal like we would at any bar, just wide open, and taste them side by side with these other breweries and kind of really get excited about the possibilities. So yeah, I think it's been great. I mean, I've had Drownlands even like, and I'll be like, oh my god, I can't believe you're pouring Gather House on a lucre, that's so cool. Like, you know, I think there's something really unique about it. And it's, we just did a milk pour party last night, and essentially, this was just like taking the Kolsch service and doing just milk pours and changing the milk pour that we're pouring throughout the evening, so that you can try, you know, more than one beer. And people really enjoyed it. So
I owe it to the thieves to do my job at some point. And I guess the next thing I just want to touch on, since we're kind of there anyway, is now that you have your system in place and it's built, how big is it? What is there any specification about it outside, you know, 2-3 barrel that's interesting? And as you've settled into brewing on it, besides the things you've learned from your service, what other choices, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like what did you do to fit service? What is service causing you to do in the brew house? And what is the actual brew house now that you've landed it, set it up, and turned it on?
Sure. Yeah. So it's a Premier Stainless. First time I worked with them. They've been phenomenal, actually. I'm familiar with Pacific Mechanical in Canada, which I really enjoyed their system too. But Premier, they built us what they call the most over-engineered 3-barrel system because it is it's capable of doing decoction and step mash. Probably do turbine mashing too if I wanted to, but it's a mash
Wait,
kettle.
Do you have rakes on a 3-barrel system?
I do.
Fuck off.
Oh yeah.
We are still paddle stirring a 15-barrel brew house. Fuck off.
Oh no.
Damn it.
That's amazing.
Are they good rakes or are they getting stuck on anything you put more than 3 bags in?
No.
I'm so jealous. They're fuck off.
Yeah.
All right, keep talking. Sorry, but fuck you. Keep talking.
No, it's okay. I'm not jealous because I've worked on those systems you're talking about. I know what manual labor.
Rakes. It's amazing. Technology. Anyway, go on.
This is just cute, Augie taking a long walk on the beach, reevaluating everything he's done in his life.
Everything I've done. What was that thinking?
Well, you know, look, at the end of the day, for me, it was like, I have to run the business. I have to, I'm not just brewing beer here, you know, like that's a full-time job on its own, but like, I have to also run the business. I have to work at the bar full-time, you know, all the admin, all the other things that I have to do. So I have to make the brewery side as easy as possible for me. And to be able to handle all that. So those are decisions that were also made consciously because my previous brew house was also a 2-vessel decoction system. And I will say that having the rakes on the lauter tun really does help homogenize things when you're transferring back.
I also like that you're thinking about the work-life balance though, and like working smarter.
Sure.
You know, and letting,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That and yeah, not that you've done so not that happening. You not that you've done any, and it doesn't sound like you're headed that way, but if you're ever doing any, you know, monster where you want to, you know, use all that decoction setup, all that to really Maillard affect some sugars, the rakes make all the difference for getting, you know, the best first runnings. Like it's a great tool to have, especially on that size, man. I'm John's not joking. I really am very jealous of that. That's a fun tool.
No, that's cool, man.
Good for you.
No, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I also like it's. What's cool is that the kettle is, you know, so the kettle could probably boil, you know, a lot. Like the kettle is way oversized, and the fermenters that we have they're 7-barrel, but they're actually 9-barrel. And they're very like short, they're short and wide. They're the shortest, widest I could get from them. I also believe
in there.
Geometry makes a difference.
I've got some horribly misshapen 30 barrels for you. If you ever grow into them, we made some short wide 30s for the same reason. And boy, do they look funny when people see them. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, no, I love the yeast seems a lot happier with less hydrostatic pressure, even though it's still closed tank. Trust me, I'd love to do open fermentation, but that's another time, another place. But yeah, we like the ability to be able to scale up if we need to. I love being able to do more than one turn for the same batch of beer to really like, you know, if I need to fix anything for the next batch to make sure, you know, the homogeneous mix will make sense. I love that idea. And also because it allows us to start small and then humble and just kind of see how things go and not overdo it. So, you know, the lagers get 2 turns, everything else is just 1 turn.
Are you serving off the tanks or are you kegging?
I'm kegging tanks? And then we're, okay. Yeah. So we're kegging. Although I'm definitely toying with at some point, maybe doing some fun, you know, tank pours, some unfiltered, you know, Pilsner pours just for fun. So people can appreciate again, the process of making the beer. So that's something that we'll definitely do. We have those vehicles and all that. But yeah, I think that is what was important for us. I think also because we wanted to blend and do some fun coffee stuff. I think and then the question for us was like, well, you know, we want to have cans to go. we're not going to say no to growlers or crawlers, but we wanted to have cans to go. And I, you know, we didn't want to shy away from the four pack. So we ended up actually picking up the new October machine. That's the push button. And we found a way to can the beer in a way that, like, we're able to sanitize, purge the cans, fill them, and get the weights we want, get the seams we want. It's, you know, definitely painfully slow, but it, you know, if we get like 7-8 cases in a few hours and we're just cool, like, that's awesome. That'll be great, you know. And that's,
yeah, not,
that's
not
all
to,
we're looking
not to
at
be
have
a
right
dick
now.
Not to be a dick, I know I should know this, but all of three barrels is only how many cases, right? Like, if you canned all of a three barrel brew,
sure.
I'm having trouble with the math at that size. This isn't, I just don't know, but it's not much more than like 25-30 cases, right?
So we do. So we have, if it's 3.5 barrel batches, and sometimes it's more than that, we'll do about like an 85. If it's a clean, you know, beer, we'll do about an 85-86% yield, maybe a little more. And then we'll just do like, you know, it's 12 ounce, so it's about 2.25 gallons.
Okay, so
case.
That's the thing I was fucking up. I was thinking of pints, but yes. Okay. So go on.
Yeah, 2.25 gallons per case. So if we do like, you know, roughly, you know, the most I'd want to do is like 36 85. Gallons. It's like a row. It's a row. It's a 389 cans, about 16 cases. That's the most I would want to do.
But that's about half of a batch, right? You probably wouldn't have enough for service if you push that any further, right?
Yeah, no, I would do, it's more like we'd still have about four, we'd still have more like four to five half barrels left over. Depending on the beer, you know, if it's a heavily hopped beer, obviously no, but you know,
I got it.
Like we did, yeah, we
I'm
did
just
like
saying that sounds like a perfect ratio to me. That sounds like any more
would
be overkill on the business, right? All right, very cool.
Correct,
all right, so
yeah.
Believe it or not, after telling us you had to disappear, we have gone a full episode. So it's time for me to put a button in this. And thank you for coming out, man. It's awesome to have you. I'm super excited. I want to come up and talk coffee beers with you. I've been known to dabble in that world. More, I want to drink your coffee and taste your beers. So
and then both.
Kennedy, do you have a letter for us? Is Kennedy not here?
He might have stepped away.
I'm here. I have a letter.
Do you have a letter for us? All right, do it.
Kennedy, my man, recently John had Chris Shields of Rheingeist Brewery on the Drink Beer Think Beer podcast and
That's
talked
true.
About
does,
the future
does
of the beer industry.
That, does nobody know they wrote the wrong podcast?
They talked about how even if that question was asked 5 years ago, they wouldn't have been able to tell you what the fuck? I can't even read this right now. Just too many this, that's, and the other things.
What was the first part of it though? What did Shield say?
They talked about how even. Oh, hold on here. The
this
talked
is
about
you
the future.
And somebody, John.
Yeah.
Yes.
You and Chris talked about the future of the beer industry. Talked
the
about
yeah.
the future of the beer industry. I won't ask you to try and tell the future, but what it made me think about is how it seems that the beer industry is being asked to stretch in ways that other alcohol industries aren't. Some liquors are being made sweeter, as referenced in your discussion with Mr. Goldfarb. And it seems to the uneducated me that wine will always be wine, but beer has been on an interesting journey for the last few decades. Is there a point at which it isn't the beer industry anymore, but the malt beverages industry?
Okay.
There is one more question in there, too. There's like a lot of questions here. You want the last
right.
one,
well,
too?
What's the last question?
Has beer gained so much in its ability to bring new and interesting flavors to people so quickly that it is now losing some of its foundation?
It's a mutual fund, man.
Wow.
I think
wow.
it's a mutual fund.
That's a lot of
query. And honestly, it's a conversation that I've been having with some folks. And as much as I want to get into this now, I feel like this is something that we could actually have a full fun conversation about on this show.
Okay, so why don't we save it? Why don't we save it for the next time? Let's put a button on this letter to come back to when we don't have a guest, because we did have a guest and I enjoyed this guest. So I want to say thank you to you, Johnny. We really appreciate you coming out. I'm psyched to try your beers. Cass, I guess we're skipping that letter per John's request. Although I guess, do I have to do any homework and listen to one of your shows, John? Do you want to send me a link?
I'll send you a link.
Okay. So I'll do that as out of respect for this letter and I'll move on. Now, Johnny, this would be the part where you tell them how to come see you wherever you want to be seen by them. And then Cass tells them how to give us money. But Johnny, you first.
Sweet. Johnny, you first. You can visit us. Sweet. You can visit us. We're open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. on 8 Wilson Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, right off the L. Morgan stop or the J.M. Myrtle Broadway stop. And yeah, for all your uppers and downers needs. And hopefully, you know, we can change your mind about, you know, Northeast grains and barley and hops in beer. So
nice. Well, I can't wait to give it a shot. Cass.
I'm excited.
Make Patreon. That money, Cass. Earn that money, Cass.
Patreon.com/stealthisbeer. Thank you all that donate. Really appreciate it.
What's the best nation?
Donation.
Donation.
Write us letters. stealthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com. See what we're drinking on Untapped at Steal This Beer. Follow us on the socials at Steal This Beer.
All right, y'all. Get at us.